Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, coming to you live out of Central Kentucky. This is Stephen Zimmer. Joined with me tonight is the awesome R.G. Westerman for episode number 268, for those keeping score. And we're going to have a great show for you tonight. And Daniel Dark should be joining us in progress at some point whenever he gets done having fun on the old trolley. So we will definitely bring him in as soon as he logs in. But for right now, it's just me and RG. So hello,
hello.
And hello. Yes, you've recovered, I hope, finally from your film production. Hope you say you sound a little pepped up and re-energized.
Yeah, like it took a solid week of just like napping and being boring to get like back into feeling normal again.
Oh
yeah. No, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's even worse than con crud. Yeah, it lasts even longer than concrete.
It really is. Yeah.
So,
I'm excited. We have a website up. Go to nobodyslisteningmovie.com. Right now you can see some backstage, or behind backstage. Good grief. I'm a theater kid. Behind the scenes pictures, and we're hoping to have like a trailer coming soon. But, yeah, it's nobodyslisteningmovie.com.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And nobodyslisteningmovie.com. And Nobody's Listening Movie. Sorry, I got to get it straight.
Yeah.
Nobody'sListeningMovie.com.
Yeah.
And with the actual website, that means there's going to be official IMD listings.
That's
a good sign. I know how actors are about that. I've dealt with actors on that, so I know how that tends to go. And
well,
we're looking at the.
Go ahead.
What's
sorry.
That? Oh no, no, go ahead, go ahead.
All of my previous acting has been under my maiden name, so my current IMDb like self is under my maiden name. So I'm trying to figure out how to credit myself in this, like, because my name's different, obviously. I've been married for almost 17
right.
years. So, like, how, like, does anyone, if anyone out there in podcast land has any advice on how to handle this? And, like, yeah, I don't know, because I'm not famous. So, you know, I don't know. Do I keep it the same or do I hyphenate? What do? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that is a good question, actually. I've never had to deal with that myself on with actors yet. So I don't know myself. We in our circle, of course, we know a lot of different filmmakers, so I know we can get the answer. I bet if you have an IMDb Pro account, there's some way to, like, update that so that it refreshes across all your credits. There's got to be a way to do that. In IMDb Pro, there's got to be a way to do that. Yeah, once you're tied to those various credits, it's sort of like an Amazon Author Central thing. There's got to be some sort of way to make those changes.
It connects it, yeah.
So,
well, and I've seen
yeah.
others where it says as blah blah, like they were like before they got their official actor name or whatever they were still using their middle name or something like that. Yeah, so I've seen it. I just don't know how to, but we'll work it out. We'll figure
we
it out.
We are going to look into this because that's actually a question I'd like to figure out myself because I did not know that.
Yeah.
But that's cool. And so for those just joining, we have several new people in the chat room. I see Amy McCorkle. I see Kenzie Michael, Sandy Lender, Tommy B. Smith. We've got a lot of great regulars in the chat room. Looks like Daniel Dark is logging in right now. But nobodyslisteningmovie.com. Make sure you get that down and check it out. Check it out, folks.
Yeah.
And
no,
Daniel, good to see you.
Regularly.
Oh, good to see you, man.
There he is. I saw you on a cloud, behind a cloud of smoke on Instagram, so I know you've been busy.
Yeah.
It looked fun.
I was turning my trolley around and pulling out of the parking lot, and a guy pulled up right as I was turning around and everything and pulled right up to the front of the trolley asking me if I was still open. I was like, yeah, come on.
Well, hey, that's how you do it. New business, you're always open. like I am, somebody contacts me at 2 a.m. Hey, do you have any slots for editing? Oh, let me talk to you. No, I know how it goes. You know, when somebody wants to talk business, it's fun.
That's awesome.
But glad you could join us.
Then on the way home and everything, I had to stop for 3 different fire trucks and stuff that were going to some call. Mm-hmm. I'd pull over.
Oh, geez.
That one would pass me, and I'd get back on the road, go down a little ways, pull back over, let another one pass me, pull.
Oh, wow.
I was like,
wow.
Like, I'm already running late. Come on, guys.
It's not like the trolley is easy to maneuver either, I imagine. It's probably not quite as simple as just driving the old car around.
Yeah,
you got to pull over.
Yeah. Oh, I imagine you do. Definitely. Well, I do actually have one cool update, and actually one of the people in our chat room is on this list, so it's kind of fun. I get to read a name here in a second. But we did announce.
Hello?
Hello. I'm here.
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Where's Steve go?
Where does
Steven
go? We got to come up with some witty banter while he comes back.
I came on.
No,
I kicked him off. Man.
What's that?
I came on. I kicked him off. I guess. Yeah.
Oh, boo! No, that's okay. No, I've been enjoying seeing your pictures on Instagram. What he was talking about. It looks so cool. The trolley. It's really impressive.
Thank you. I did a car show this last weekend and everything, and when I first got there, I didn't think that I was going to do any business because I'm looking around this big, they had it at a drive-in theater.
Yeah.
And I'm looking
around
the whole parking lot of this drive-in theater, and there's like 2 cars or 3 show cars and some guys sitting around this truck. And I'm like,
wow.
Okay, where are all the rest of the cars at?
I'm surprised there's not more. Yeah,
those cars
are
about
there. You
know,
you are.
That they're supposed to be set up. So.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I got dropped. It just dropped me.
Yeah.
It was a gremlin in the system. I got disconnected. So, apologies. So I'm not sure what you're talking about. I tuned in time to look in the chat room and see something about Kevin Sorbo from Kenzie Michaels. So something exciting is being discussed, but I don't know if that had to do with what you're all talking about.
No. Well, no, but the Kevin Sorbo thing is pretty cool. But it's not my story to tell. I can't share that particular thing.
Okay, gotcha.
But
I just saw that in the chat room.
Daniel Dark, Daniel Dark was talking about going to a car show with his trolley.
Ooh, now that would be fun. That would be cool.
Yeah, it was a hot rod show and everything like that, and we did it at a drive-in theater, and halfway, about the thing started at 3:00. At 3:00, there still wasn't very many cars there. And I'm like, this is not going to fare well for me. And then they started pouring, they're supposed to be set in there and set up at 2:30. They started pouring in.
Oh, my.
And they had a whole car, almost every spot in this drive-in theater had a hot rod in it of some type.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then they, I'm still talking to different people that, we just want to see, we don't smoke cigars, we just want to see inside. And I'm like, okay. You know,
get out. Out.
And then well, all you, of a sudden, about 4 o'clock, I hear an announcement, you know, saying, you know, about over the PA system that they got going on up in front about, you know, gentleman cigar trolley and everything. And, you know, if you haven't gotten a, you know, if you haven't got your good cigar and everything, go over to gentleman's cigar trolley. And I did more that night than I've done in a week.
Wow.
Nice. Nice.
You know, so.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's
well,
awesome.
You had the best hot rod of all. Oh, that's awesome, though. Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that, Daniel. That's cool. That's cool. And, yeah, you definitely probably had the one of the vehicles that attracted many eyes around there. So, yeah, we'll count you as a hot rod driver. That's awesome.
It may be slower than they are in first gear, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's okay.
That's okay. That's all right.
Do they rev their engines? Did they have an engine revving contest?
They had a light contest. I don't know whether they had an official engine revving contest, but you heard a bunch of them, you know, starting up their cars at different times,
right.
Doing, you know,
yeah.
Doing
yeah.
that and stuff. But you know, it was pretty fun after, you know, everything got started. You know, really got going. Started, you know, from about 4 o'clock on, it picked up a whole lot. And,
very nice.
That sounds like so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, but I had
that's
a kid
cool.
that was parked right behind me there, or actually he's parked right in the way I pulled in and everything. He was like 10 feet behind the trolley.
Hmm.
And he had this low rider, like little Ford Bronco type thing or something like that, that was all the way down on the ground. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
Can you drive it like
yeah.
that? And he goes, no, it's only got a half inch clearance when it's
wow.
all the way down.
Yikes. Yeah, I thought Camaros were bad. Oh my God. That's even
don't
worse.
Hit any
yeah, no kidding.
So that a lot of them had the air kits and everything. And they, you know, they would drop them, you know, all the way down, you know, as far as they would go and stuff. But this kid that was
yeah.
right behind me and everything. The bottom of the car you couldn't see because the grass was taller than the, you know, the bottom of the car.
Wow. Unbelievable.
That's awesome. Well, that's awesome. That is awesome. But I do have to get a quick announcement in before we do sponsors, and I meant to do it before it got cut off, but the first group of Imaginarium 2000, you can tell I've been working a lot the last 2 days. The first group of Imaginarium 2021 Independent Film Festival official selections were announced. This is not a final list. There are others being added, but we just announced the first batch because we wanted to get some of the, you know, the ones that were definitely approved notified so they could begin making plans for the event. And so I will go ahead and read these because we actually have one of them in the chat room, so that's a little bit of a teaser there. The film and the directors, Heart of the City with Josh Ickes, Lockdown, the Emotional Impact of COVID-19 and Quarantine by Robert Messinger, What Lies Ahead by two directors, Rena McMonagle and Ronnie Cleary, The Basement by Naima Chabai, Misadventures of Ichabod Crane by Guido Jimenez Cruz, we have Comic Book Hero by Justin Mex. We have While We Stayed Home by Gil Vesely, Me Inside by Dana Lara Byam, The Great and Terrible Day of the Lord by Jared J. Mason and Clark Rinseman. We have Red Letters by Aaron Allen. We have Recovery Unplugged with Annabelle Lurie by Amy L. McCorkle. So, yes,
yay!
Amy is in the chat room as we speak. Then we have Snorri Mustachio
oh,
by
wow.
Victoria Warmer Dam, The Routine Russ by Russ Emanuel, The Assassin's Apprentice by Russ Emanuel, then Paragenex Season 1 by Darrell Miller and Christian Griffith, and then Koreatown Ghost Story by Minson Park and Teddy Tenenbaum. So, yes, that is the first group of official selections for this year's Imaginarium Film Festival. So, grats to all for being in, and those are all up for the juried awards. So, we'll see what happens. But,
nice.
That's
and
that.
It's one that Ms. McCorkle's in. Is that the one that Kevin Sorbo's in?
No, it is not. I do know that much. Yeah, no, as a an episode of her Recovery Unplugged series. So, but that's a good, very good series. So I know that she'll be in contention. But I am not one of the judges, just to be clear. So I stay away from that side of things. Yeah, the imaginary.
I just want to say one thing. Hercules. Okay, I've said the one thing.
Nice. And our guest has just called in, and I know that our guests can hear us. So hang on there for just a second. We just have to make sure we acknowledge our awesome sponsors right prior to bringing you on. So here we go. Tonight's sponsors are Jumpmaster Press and Sandy Lender. So, yeah, they got a couple of good spots for you to listen to, and please do listen to the code on the Jumpmaster Press ad and use it because, yeah, you can get something nice over there at their site. Using this special code. So here we go for Jumpmaster Press.
Do you love to read? Do you love sci-fi and fantasy and horror and mystery and maybe even romance? Then Jumpmaster Press has something for you. Jumpmaster Press would like to give you a 10% discount on our entire catalog. Just go to jumpmasterpress.com and use code IMAGINE2021 at checkout to save 10% on anything in our vast catalog. That's jumpmasterpress.com and IMAGINE2021 at checkout. Jumpmaster Press, a proud sponsor of the Star Chamber podcast and Imaginarium 2021.
That's awesome. And following that, thank you, Gene and Kyle, both of whom will be at Imaginarium. Get to meet them both if you come see us. Next up is Sandy Lender, who will also be at Imaginarium. So here's a bit about Sandy.
Do you prefer dragons cute and cuddly and playing among half-blood fairies? Maybe you like to see fledgling dragons growing into companions of characters you cheer for, from shoulder dragons to dragons in space, to warrior dragons who take to the skies ahead of armies of men, to towering dragons who rise from the stones of mountains to blot out the very stars with their mass. Fantasy author Sandy Lender brings them all to life. Follow award-winning author Sandy Lender on the Amazon platform. Stop by her booth at the Imaginarium Convention, online or in person, to discover your next favorite dragon species.
And thank you, Sandy. And yes, she raises all those types of dragons at her home. I know, so shoulder dragons up to the ones that can blot out the sky. Thank you, Sandy. And then last but not least, right before our guests, we are going to play the new Imaginarium spot because I just love it so much, narrated by the amazing Gene Rowley.
Attention fans and creators of all genres. The 8th Annual Imaginarium Convention is coming July 9th through 11th to Louisville, Kentucky. Imaginarium features over 100 panels and workshops for writers, filmmakers, cosplayers, game designers, artists, and more. This year, Imaginarium Convention has both virtual and in-person events, including a film festival, an expo hall, entertainment, the Imagine Awards, and much more. Visit www.enterTheImaginarium.com for more information. Enter the Imaginarium.
Just love that echo out there at the end.
Awesome.
That's just awesome. But our guest tonight is one of my favorite people in the book world, I will say that, who I met many years ago at the Mid-South Con convention in Memphis, Tennessee. And he is very well-recognized editor of many amazing anthologies, has written many novels and short stories, and has a brand new one that he will be discussing with us tonight. So it's my honor to bring on to the Star Chamber Show for, I believe, the very first time, the one, the only, Robert J. Krogh. Welcome to the Star Chamber Show. Your microphone is on, and you are live.
Hi, Stephen. Nice to see you again. Nice to hear from you again.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, if it's a video podcast, we'd be set on seeing each other. But since I look very disheveled right now after a day of office work, so yeah, you probably don't want to see me right now. But I am. Well, it is good to have you here. And I definitely am glad that Daniel and RG are getting to at least virtually meet you tonight. Because you are definitely somebody I'm excited about your return to the convention, and definitely want to get get into your novel and definitely, you know, help everybody listening tonight gets to find out more about you before the big July event. So good to have you tonight, man.
Hey, thank you very much. I want to say hello, RG, and hello, Daniel. Nice to meet you guys.
Hello. Hello. Pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Thank you.
So yeah, it's been a few years.
Satan for a while now?
Say what?
You've known Satan for a while now?
Yeah, we met, gosh, it must be a decade ago now. We used to do a lot of conventions together, and then I think our convention routes changed. Mine stayed pretty much local, and I guess, Stephen, you were going elsewhere a lot.
Yes. Yeah, we're in the same general region, but yeah, definitely. Yeah, you were down more near the Memphis part of the circuit, and I was hitting more of the tri-state area, and then a few trips out east. So yeah, we definitely had a little bit of a divergence, but of course not in heart. Though I've always thought highly of you your work, and look forward to it. And you did make it to at least one Imaginarium, one of the early ones. So
I made it to the second one, I think.
Second
and then
one.
I saw you and Holly. You and Holly were at a was it ShadowCon several years ago? I saw you guys was the last time.
Let me think. We went to HyperaCon together in Nashville. I know we went to that one.
Maybe that's where I saw you.
Yeah, I bet you that was it. Because Blaylock, I think, was there and the gang. Yeah, and that was a great one too. That was, oddly enough, that was the first time ever that I've been a guest of honor was at that particular event. So yeah, that was the one weekend I finally got to experience the red carpet treatment as a guest of honor, and I was like, that's awesome. Yeah, and unfortunately, since then it's not happened, but I have fond memories of that one. But it was that was a great weekend, and I definitely hope that with all this COVID nightmare finally seemingly getting over, that we will all get to start trekking out a little bit more and going to some events and resuming our circuit activity. I hope so.
That would be fabulous.
Yeah, because I know that, for us authors, being there in person to see our peers and our readers, that's what really gets us going. I mean, most of the people I know, yeah. Even though,
really
oddly enough, most of us are introverts, but yet we need that those times when we're actually in our group. You know, it's a strange kind of balance. You know, and I know it can be exhausting for some of us, but it definitely it has a special quality. And like I said, you know, that's where I got to meet you for the first time. You know, was at a convention event, and here we are.
We,
you know,
we
10 years later.
Yeah, we were neighbors at Mid-South Con one year, and you had, the first of those, I'm sorry, forgive me, I'm on the air for the first time.
Rising Dawn Saga books, because you actually read, I believe, through Storm Guardians, and oddly enough, this is kind of an irony, but the novel I'm working on finishing now, I'm done with the main body of it, and I'm just doing the polishing phase for handing off to the editor, but The Crimson Rain, book 5 in that series, is what I'm working on right now, so it's kind of ironic that, we're having a visit from you tonight, because I know that's the stuff that I was first promoting when I first met you, so everything's coming full circle.
I've read three or four of them, and I've missed one somewhere in here, and then I need to get the last one or two then. Yeah. So
awesome. Well, you'll be pleased with this one. But more importantly tonight, though, the focus, of course, is on you, and you have a new book. So I think we ought to just kick it off and start with your brand new novel and get our conversation underway and let Rebecca and Daniel explore that with you, too.
Oh, sure. Thank you. This is my first published novel, actually. I've had a bunch of short stories and collections and some novelettes and novellas out, but never a full novel before. And this is titled Shank, and it is the fifth one set in the Hit World universe, which is from Chris Kennedy Publishing, started by, Bill Webb and Larry Hoy, for a couple of writers you may or may not know. I don't know. But
they both
been
on the show together.
Okay,
they were
great.
On the show together. Yeah.
Just been a month or so back or something.
Yeah, it's a little bit back. But, we had both of them on the show, not too far back. But, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so they wrote first two novels together, and then a guy named John Sears wrote to the sequential. And I've got number 5 that actually is taking place a little bit before the first one, and then goes and catches up to the first one. But Shank is a hitman, and in Hit World, it's legal to hire to murder people so long as you hire a professional to do it. This is an alternate version of the United States in which it's a little crazy, but after 9/11, in this version of reality, 9/11 was a whole lot worse, and almost the entire government was wiped out. And while it was paralyzed, doing nothing, a band of mercenaries and rich people hired a bunch of mercenaries to go and take out the enemy, and they took them out fast. And a lot of things got changed in that chaotic situation. One of them was that they decided the best way to handle the murder problem in the country was to legalize it and make it only professionals could do it, which is pretty far-fetched. But if you just go with it, then you have a very entertaining and interesting setup. And my guy Shank, or Gordon Shaw is his name, but he gets called Shank because one time, he stabbed the guy to death instead of shooting him. But they're called professional shooters in the business. But he got stuck with the name Shank, and he hates it. But so that's kind of...
He literally brought a knife to a gunfight.
He brought a gun that jams to a gunfight and had to stab a guy to death with broken shards of a baby gate.
It's always good to have a backup plan.
Or to be able to improvise.
Right.
And so, Gordon Shaw is this... He's a bad guy. He's not a very likable character. But what happens in the book is that I was asked to write it by Bill Webb, and the first thing he asked for was a series, a couple of short, short novellas or something. And so I had several of them planned, and then Chris Kennedy Publishing picked it up, and he said, well, can you turn it into a novel? And so I had these separate stories that I blended together, and what we ended up doing is following several main characters around in addition to Gordon Shaw. One of the people he's supposed to kill, we get his story leading up to that, and then we get the wife of another man that he killed, and you follow a number of people around. Go ahead.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That is awesome. And, like we were talking earlier, it's a shared universe, and I guess one of the first things that might be fun exploring from a writing standpoint is the topic of writing in a shared universe and what you did to prepare for that, to get ready for not only understanding the universe you're writing in, but then the process of how to get your own voice into that pre-existing kind of setting and those kind of challenges. If you'd care to comment a little bit on those things, that would be awesome.
Oh, sure. I'd love to. So Bill and Larry wrote a Bible for it with a whole setup, the historical setup for it and the legalities of how you can and cannot are and are not allowed to shoot people and all that bit. And so I have a bunch of guidelines to follow. And then after that, of course, I read there the short works they had already written in it that they were expanding into novels. And I read those and got a feel for what was going on, a general tone. And fortunately, because I can't just duplicate their style, Bill and Larry are very easygoing. They say, no, we didn't ask other people to come into this to duplicate our voice. Just go ahead and use your own. Just follow the law. And so it's easy to work with them. They're great. As long as we manage to have the continuity right and don't start breaking the laws of the universe we're in. We've got to have a shared set of laws. Things work a certain way. And if something goes awry, well, then it has to be corrected before it goes to publication, of course. And there's a lot of going back and forth and calling people and saying, hey, do you mind if I use this character? Or, there's something a little fuzzy here about it. You know, how does it work with in a particular situation? For instance, are politicians immune to this, or are they able to be assassinated? And the answer was actually yes. And so almost anybody can be killed. But there's a way to protect yourself from that is to have contingency hits out that anyone who kills you, you know, you can go after them. And so you have a hitter on just standing by working for you. Just in case you get killed, he goes after the people who killed you. And so you have safeguards that hopefully work. It's a strange and lethal universe. Yes, ma'am.
So it's like Purge with paperwork.
It's like what?
It's like Purge with paperwork.
I don't know what Purge is.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm laughing over here, too. Yeah, Purge, is, as she's referring to, the movie series where they give, like, a 24-hour period for people to basically go after their enemies and, you know, without legal consequence.
Without
and they were, like, it's,
yeah.
Yeah, real pretty popular horror thrillers. But, yeah, that's what that's actually a good marketing tactic he probably could use. That's probably a good good job, RG, there. He gave him a good marketing
I will mention that to mention that to Bill and Larry just in case they haven't thought of that. Because I've heard of that, but it's forgotten about it. Yeah, there is some paperwork to be done. You've got to have you got to know you're absolutely killing the right guy.
Right.
And the a part of Larry Hoy's novel, A Bullet for the Shooter, is the guy is a provisional shooter. He's not ready to go out yet, but they're taking him through his first hit and guiding him through it. And there's a whole bunch of checks to make certain he's going after the right guy, and it's very difficult and stressful for your new shooter there. Purge with paperwork, sure.
I mean, well, it also kind of gives me vibes of the some of the early Discworld series. They have the Assassin's Guild, and it's, of course, a very humorous event, which, you know, they have to, like, they have a ceremony and this graduation, and then immediately after the graduation, they have to go and kill someone, and it's this whole, I don't know, it's this whole big thing, but it's, you know, if you're familiar with Terry Pratchett, it's given me some of those kind of vibes, yeah. It sounds amazing. I can't wait to read it.
Well, I'm glad you're excited. I am unbelievably glad. I'm actually probably glowing right here because I blush too easily. Just ask Stephen. He's seen me sitting there, get a smile on my face, and someone buy a book, and I'm, oh! So just the mention of it is exciting. Yeah, it's my book is not as funny. It's probably a bit grimmer. And then I've got another whole section with a romance following the guy there's an author in it. A guy by the name of Methodius Charn is his pen name. And eventually a rival wants to take him out because he's jealous. And so Shaw is supposed to go and kill this guy. But before you ever hear about the hit being taken out on him, I've got Methodius falling in love with someone. So I've got a whole love story going through it. Just to make it that much worse when something terrible is going to happen. And there's another element to it is that the hit world is an urban fantasy setting. So you've got magic in it, and it's not real well known, but they say hit world where everything you don't believe is true is true. So Bigfoot's out there, the Loch Ness Monster is out there, fairies are out there. But it's just like in the real world where nobody believes in them, but they're actually there. And so you've got the options for a lot of other things in addition in hit world, magic and excursions into fairyland, I suppose, although I don't think anyone's written that exactly. John Sears' novels involve dragons, and I haven't read his yet. I'm sorry. I've only gotten to the first two before, that are connected to mine yet, but I have five children, so I keep pretty busy. But it's a lot of potential in here. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I admire you. That's definitely a full-time workload. Yeah. But because when Bill was on, one of his books had a gigantic rhino-like creature on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was like, oh, my God, yeah, that's some pretty cool stuff. Yeah, some pretty interesting stuff. Yeah, you could how's your cover? Describe the cover of yours a little bit. I'd like to hear about that since we talked to Bill quite a bit about covers last time.
Okay, so my cover for Shank is a guy kind of in a hoodie way in the background with a big knife in his hand, and then neck down a lizard man kind of with a gun in his hand and a nice red kind of umbra background setting, and there's a chandelier in the background, and it's a hint at the one of the big climactic scenes in the book. And it's a little bit of a metaphorical cover, but it covers the feeling of the book at certain times, and it's a lovely cover, and I hope people are really attracted to it. And
yeah,
I guess that about covers it, just describing it, but if you can see it.
That covers it. I see what you did there. Oh, I see what you did there. That covers it. Nice, man.
That was accidental, good. Stephen. That was accidental.
Oh, okay. I was just like, that's clever.
Take the credit.
Take the credit. Take the credit. Is it coming out next week? I wanted to make sure we got that straight for the audience.
Okay, so it's available for early release this week, and then it comes out, I believe the 14th is when it's set to actually be fully released.
Nice.
And it's released to people who signed up for Chris Kennedy Publishing early release stuff, I think, are getting it now.
And both print and ebook, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And, I want to give a quick shout-out to the Appalachian Ghost, Matthew Smith, who has joined us for the first time in the chat room. Yeah, hi, Matthew. Glad you could join us tonight. Where is the publisher's website if folks want to dive in, like right now, to get more about the book and maybe dive in on that?
Okay, you just need to look up Chris Kennedy Publishing and you'll find it very quickly. And
great.
That's something I should have had pulled up on my phone here immediately so I could give you the exact information, shouldn't I? But it's
just
Kennedy
so RG or myself can put that in. Yeah. Let me see if I can look that up there. But Shared Worlds that's an interesting thing because you have to follow a pre-existing framework, and at the same time you have to make it your own, put your own voice to it. And I think that, I always cite Robert Salvatore, with his Drista Yerdon character as somebody that has done a masterful job of working in a shared world and yet making that their own. And do you feel after doing this novel that you did make it, definitely has the Krogh voice whilst also, remaining true to the parameters?
Yes, I did. Mine is a little more low-key as far as the magic and stuff is concerned. Bill's went, goes up over the top almost with all the just massive things going on and lots and lots of magic. And I took mine a little more low-key, and we can work my character into the bigger plots later, but I wanted him to be something on the sidelines that built into the stuff later. And hopefully, Shaw will end up being on the wrong side, I imagine, when we have the overarching plots and things all start, the books connect later and all the plot lines converge. I've set Shaw up to be on the opposite side from their characters. You're talking about Shared Worlds. I actually did an anthology called End of the World Potluck a couple years ago that was just brutal to do. It was a lot of fun. It was very rewarding, but I had a shared world there, and it brought a lot of authors in to write in an end-of-the-world scenario where everyone in a small town is competing to get into a shelter before a comet hits and brings about the end of civilization and such.
Nice.
And I had I had to write up a whole Bible and all these different common characters they might encounter and then let people, ask me to write that character or come up with one of their own. And it was hard to keep everyone coordinated and keep the timeline, keep to the timeline and the descriptions of the common characters in the town and such, and the rules of getting into the sanctuary before the end.
Wow.
But it was very rewarding to work together with all those guys, and everybody really went out of their way to make it work. And I didn't have anybody being a pain in the butt on purpose anyway. Sometimes you have difficulty just because there's misunderstandings, but it was really rewarding. It was called End of the World Potluck, an anthology from Hereth, SFFH, and that was a lot of fun. And I don't envy Bill what he's having to do, having done it on small scale. He's doing it on large. I don't envy him having to coordinate all this, he or Larry, either one.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a lot of work, but it is rewarding. Having done it before, it's great, but it's a lot of work.
Well, as an author in the shared universe, you have to follow by the guidelines. But can you have a character that does not follow any of the guidelines?
How do you mean?
Like you've got an assassin that he just does what he wants to do, and he doesn't follow
just
any
in
of
the real
guidelines.
World, if he goes and breaks the rules, then of course he's going to have to face the consequences. And that's one of the things that actually is one of the conflicts that comes up in a couple of the books so far, is someone who starts breaking the rules and then having to face the possibility of ending up on the wrong side of his own organization. And the shooter organization in the United States is called LEI, Life Enders Incorporated. And they, you know, obviously being in the business of killing people, you don't want to cross them. And if you work for them and break the rules, they're going to be especially harsh. And that comes up in one way or another in each of the three books, the two books I read, one by Bill and one by Bill and Larry, and then my own, it comes up eventually, yeah. But yeah, just like in the real world, you can break the law, but then there are the consequences of breaking it. And LEI is really harsh about that. And there's this great character that's going to appear in all the different books, Miss Witherbot, who is the assistant director of LEI, and she's made of cast iron. She's just awful, but a very entertaining character nevertheless.
She's made of cast iron?
For a moment,
well,
I thought you meant
figuratively speaking. figuratively speaking.
I was like, oh, wow, okay, that took a turn.
Well, no, there's a... Sorry, there's an expression, a cast iron, you know what, but I'm not going to say it.
No, yeah, no, I understand.
She's one of those.
That's
but a very well-done character and entertaining, and she fills the spot in the books that she needs to fill and does it well.
That's cool.
But, yeah,
cool.
You can break the rules and then face the consequences. Yeah.
That's fun.
Very nice. And yes, Robert, we are talking speculative fiction, so you just never know when you're speaking directly about something.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Right.
Well, I did hear the lilt of enthusiasm and RG when... Sorry.
No, I was just thinking, like, okay, you have, like, clockwork characters and, you know, robot characters and... Oh, he's a cast iron character. Okay, you know, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just wondering how she had to be killed if she's made out of cast iron. I was just like,
that could be an interesting, like, plot point, actually. We're all going to write cast iron characters after this. You know that, right?
I think so. I think that's.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Robert has set off a new subgenre of speculative fiction tonight. That's what's happened tonight.
Cast iron punk. Cast iron punk.
The cast iron people.
Nice. But, yeah, definitely saying that. I heard the lilt of enthusiasm in RG's voice when you were talking about end of the world stories, though, because I know she doesn't mind those.
I have an affinity for apocalyptic fiction. I don't know what it is. Like, so yeah, I'm gonna have to check that one out for sure.
Oh, great! Thank you. That's the end of the world potluck, and you can find it at Here at SFFH.
I'll remember that. Yes,
I'm glad.
I love it. I mean, I love a good potluck, and I love a good apocalypse. So it's win-win, you know.
Yep. They get together just before the go-in. They have a big potluck dinner. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
How many Hypericons did you go to?
I've been to, I think, 3 or 4 over the years. I managed to go every so often. So I was at the one where Stephen was the guest of honor. And I was at 1 or 2 of the ones in a really tiny hotel where the dealer's room had room for about 6 or 7 tables, I think, 1 year, 1 or 2 years. And
oh,
then,
yes. I know where that was. I've been there, that one.
Yeah. And I can't remember how many others. I know there's one. I've been to 1 or 2 out near the airport in Nashville. A couple of times it was out there, and I've been out there a couple of times. So
I was just wondering whether I met you.
It's a small convention, but it's fun.
Because I used to go to Hypericon some back when they were still doing it. So
yeah.
I think I was at the last one.
Hypericon doesn't happen anymore?
I don't know what's been going on with them. I know 2020 they didn't have it, so I assumed it was just part of the whole COVID mess. But
nobody did.
Yeah, the hotel The hotel you're talking about was in the shadow of what I call the Batman building in Nashville, that one that looks like Batman, sort
yes.
of, the
yeah.
outline of it. That was so fun because they used to have, the top floor was that awesome kind of like a little ballroom where they used to have the music and stuff, and everybody used to lounge up there and hang out, and they used to have, that was a fun little place. Yeah, and you're right, the dealer room held about maybe six, maybe seven tables, but was it a Days Inn? I don't know, but that was definitely a fun little venue. That was a fun little venue.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely the one they held it at where you were talking about that I was at last. That was a nice place. Yeah, they had a good spot there. But
it was enjoyable, it really was.
Most definitely. And it turns out the first time. Tommy actually met Daniel. Tommy just mentioned chat room Daniel that the first time he met you was also at a Hypericon. So that's cool. I did not know that. A little lore from Tommy B. Smith there. But and you'll see Tommy at Imaginarium. Robert, Tommy will also be there.
Great.
But,
I know Tommy. He's a good guy. Hey, Tommy, how you doing?
Yeah. There you go. Yes, he's a... Tommy's like the neighborhood cat. You just can't get rid of him.
but everyone loves the neighborhood cat.
Well, I know. Tommy always appreciates good cat jokes. We often jest about cats. But let's talk a little bit about your last book that you had out, and it's nature, topics, and everything involved in it, Hazards and Harrows. Because I know that was the previous release that you had to Shank, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's one of my collections. It's a collection of short stories that had come out in various places over several years. And I was just looking to get some of them back out in front of the public because I knew some of them were, briefly here and there on a website or in an anthology from some publisher a few years ago. And I wanted to gather them together and have another set of things, because I would have people come to the con and say, well, I want your work, but I don't want to buy an anthology right now. Say, well, I'll bundle them together sometime, and I did. And Hazards and Heroes is a collection of those stories that had gone out of print somehow or just hadn't been available altogether at some point. And it's full of a lot of stories I really enjoyed writing. The cover art is from one titled See How Clever We Are. That's the front of the book is the one with the aluminum soldier pointing gun at a lady sitting with a tin monkey on her lap, speaking of people made of metal for RG there. And
I love it.
And that's the story of a young lady, let's see if I can remember her name, Elizabeth, I believe. Yeah, hold on, I've got the book here in front of me. Let me see. Elizabeth, yeah. So Elizabeth lives on an island with her parents, who are inventors of mechano-alchemical constructs. And her parents are going senile, and because their life force comes from, because the mechanical alchemical construct life force comes from the parents, they start going a little crazy too. And it's a harrowing tale of survival. And then the rest of it is just more stories. I've got one told entirely from the point of view of a rock. I've got
nice.
I've got a man who makes himself the unseen god of a tiny world he puts together in a laboratory with tiny people in it. That's called The Tiny Men Meet Their Maker, and a number of other stories in here. I've got one with In the Park After Dark, which is about avoiding goblins in the park if you're wise and going and playing with them if you're unwise, which involves my attempts at poetry for hopscotch rhymes as well. So...
Nice.
A hodgepodge of things thrown together.
Yeah,
usually with some
really
life
eclectic
and
mix. Yeah, and I actually have a question for you from the chat room. Tommy had asked for clarification. Actually, this did pass through my mind while you were saying it. A story from the perspective of a rock. Did you mean a stone, or were you speaking of the very large bird of mythical reference? Like the
good
rock.
Point. A stone.
Which rock?
Yes.
Stone, okay. I just wanted to clarify
the
that.
A rock. Like a piece of granite. Yeah.
I love it.
Starting deep under the earth and coming out. And I did that just to challenge myself and see if I could tell a story from a completely odd and limited perspective.
Well, I'm sure you rocked it, Robert. Ha ha! Oh, there's my bad pun for
that. Okay, so you intended that.
Yeah. I've got Tommy on that one. Tommy always loves my bad pun humor. But as you were saying, RG, before I injected my bad pun.
I can see you're getting a little bolder, Stephen.
Oh, man. Oh.
I'm sorry. You were going to say?
it sounds like a really cool, eclectic mix of stuff. And that's always I think, the kind of collections that, you know, I enjoy. Either they've got a wide range of tales, or they are, they have a really good cohesive theme. Those are the two types of collections I think I'd like the most.
Yeah,
but that sounds like one of the eclectics. Yes, or both. That's right.
Yeah, it's eclectic,
cool.
But it's all connected.
Yeah, I want to check this.
There's
out.
Always someone in terrible peril, so there's that theme, and the rest of it is just catch-as-catch-can for settings and such. It came out just as COVID started, and so. It has not seen a single convention yet. I haven't had it in front of anybody. I haven't gotten to do any readings from it. So I'm glad to mention it here because it's been sitting in limbo for this past long year of lockdowns.
Very nice.
Yeah, we have
very nice. But let's move on to some of the stuff on the editing side of things, because that's always a fun topic for writers to hear from that perspective. Now, you've mainly concentrated on being an editor of anthologies, if I'm not mistaken, tell us how you got into it and how that's obviously grown with you, because you've done several at this point.
Yeah, I've done a few at this point. So I was at a Mid-South Con or a Memphis Comic and Fantasy Convention a number of years ago, and still brand new at a lot of things. And I went up to good old Alan Gilbert of Dark Oak Press and told him that we should do a pirate anthology, because I had just learned at that convention that there was an annual pirate fest down at Mud Island in Memphis every year at that time. And I went up to him and said, you know what, you should really do a pirate anthology, because I thought that would be a great idea, and then I could write some pirate stories, and that'd be fun. And he says, well, Robert, I'm pretty busy. And I said, well, I'm like, come on, you surely you can do this. This is what you do. Because he was doing lots of anthologies at the time. I said, surely you've got time to do it right. And he says, well, sure, if you do it for me, you're going to edit it? And I said, okay. Maybe not quite that dramatically, but there was a definite pause. I'm like, okay. And then I said, okay, I'll do it. How do I do that? And so he guided me through it, and I ended up editing an anthology titled A Tall Ship, A Star, and Plunder, full of pirate tales. And the funny part of that is that by the time we got it out, the pirate fests had ended, and they weren't being done anymore. And so the venue I had intended it for didn't exist. But it was a lot of fun, and it still sold copies and got out there and had some readers, and it was a blast. But it was my introduction to editing, and I was just thrown into the fire there. Alan helped me a little bit. He would curate some of the submissions to it, and if he saw stuff that was really bad, he would just toss it aside and only send me the stuff that looked coherent. And then I got to sift through all those, but I still sifted through. I don't know how many stories to get the 20 or so that I selected, but it was a lot of fun. And then after that, having done that once, Tyree Campbell of what was Sam's Dot at the time then asked me to do some editing for him. Say what?
Nice. Well, Albin Lake is what he became later, right?
Albin Lake, and now he's here at SFFH. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And so he's gone through a couple of different ones. But I did Potter's Field 5, Stories from Unmarked Graves, and I did the number 6. Erica Raymer helped me with the first one because she'd already been up to editing, and she helped out with that, and it was great.
Nice.
Her. And then I did Potter's Field 6, and then I pitched End of the World Potluck to Tyree, and he accepted that one. So I got to have my incredibly difficult year of herding cats to get that shared world out. And then I did another one titled Tale. No, that's not that one. No Greater Love, Martyrs of Earth and Elsewhere, which is stories about people who died for a cause greater than themselves, something in the tradition of Western civilization and Christianity and such. And that was very exciting, too. And I got a lot of submissions from that and learned quite a bit from it from some people as well. I had some very interesting stories come in. But that was always – the ending of that one's always – you know, the ending of all those stories are going to be a foregone conclusion because it's about martyrs. But it still ended up being very interesting stories. And so that was a lot of fun as well. And that's the last one I did. So just a handful, really.
Yeah, you've definitely – well, you've worked with a few different presses. You've, you know, you've been through the process of anthologies. And what advice can you give to writers that are submitting stories to an editor such as yourself in an anthology project? Because I know writers love those kind of insights from editors. So what is your advice on submitting projects to say you?
My advice is read those guidelines two or three times to make sure you really know what you're sending in, because the biggest thing that happens to reject a story is to find out they didn't bother to actually submit a story for the guidelines. That's the first thing that happens is you look at something and, oh, you didn't read the guidelines. Goodbye. So that's the first thing that happens.
Yep.
And I don't have to feel too bad about that. It's when I get stories that have a lot of promise, but they're just not polished enough and, you know, well, I've got, you know, four stories I'm looking at on a similar theme here that people happen to send in, has similar ideas, and two of them are really polished and two aren't. I'm almost always going to go with the ones that cost me less work because, like I said, I've got a day job and five children. I don't have time to work too hard on helping people out on polishing their work. And as much as I would like to sometimes, and I have a few times, select a story that has so much promise, that's such a unique idea, I've got to work with the guy on it. But the best thing to do is really read those guidelines and be sure you're submitting a story to that actually matches the guidelines. Because people just throw things out there that they write a story and think, well, that's close enough, right? Maybe it'll squeeze by. It usually won't.
Oh, the famous truck stories. Yeah, where they just, somebody's doing an anthology. Well, I got a truck story I can just throw at it no matter, you know, what theme it is, what the editors said they're looking for.
Right.
They'll just throw dust off one of those truck stories and throw it out there. Yeah, I've seen that happen many times. And it's amazing to me that no matter how many times that writers hear this from editors, they still don't listen. On guidelines and such. Oh, I just laugh now after many years of dealing with it in the publishing side. It's too funny. I mean, I just got to laugh sometimes about the whole guideline thing.
Read the guidelines. Read the guidelines.
It's simple.
Mm-hmm.
Again. Yeah, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
It's really not that hard, folks. Go ahead, Daniel.
Which one bothers you worse, having one that – the story needs a lot of work or the mechanics need a lot of work?
Oh, you know, if the story needs a lot of work, that's a lot easier to reject because there's just not much to do there. But if the mechanics are bad, but I really like the idea, that's a difficult decision because I look at it, oh, what a good idea. Man, I wish I thought of that myself. Gosh. Oh, it needs so many commas in the wrong spot and misspellings and typos and run-on sentences. And if you really intend to say it that way, that's a little bit gut-wrenching sometimes, thinking it has so much promise, but, oh, my goodness, do I have time to clean that up for him and to have him go back over it? Mechanics, I think, is worse because if the story doesn't work, it's easy to reject. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely, definitely. And, I just read a couple comments here in the chat room for Tommy. He says, someone who completely ignores the formatting specified in the guidelines. And I'd said, guidelines are not suggestions. But, yeah, it's so
no.
True.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Yeah, if the formatting's completely off, I'll frequently just send it back saying, no thank you.
Right.
That too. Once in a while, if the queue's not very full, I'll take a look at one of those. But usually, I just reject them because, you know, no time for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because telegraphs.
Yeah,
a lot of things. Go ahead, RG. You're on it.
No, I was just gonna say it reveals the level of detail. Like if some, like if I'm submitting something, I want every single I is dotted and T is crossed and to let them know that I'm taking it seriously. And, you know, and I would want the same thing if something was coming to me, that level of detail, that professionalism is there. I mean, it might be a crap story, but at least they followed the instructions.
I sure appreciate not having to go back through a story and do that level of editing and proofreading and such. I do, especially because, I mean, I try the best when I submit stories like that, and I know I'm going to miss things because the worst mistake I make as a writer is reading what I thought I wrote instead of what I actually typed. And I do it. My eyes will see what I meant to put there. And I've done everything from reading stories backwards to myself to catch every word, reading them out loud. I've done all the tricks, and I'll still end up thinking, it'll go to print sometimes with something like that. The editor will miss it too, and they'll put something in print.
Yeah.
And I'll think, what on earth did I do that? The editor put that there. I didn't make that mistake. And then I go back and I look at the copy I sent to him, and no, it was me. It was usually me. It's very rarely.
Stuff gets through. It's weird. And it's like, I always say, there's like there's some kind of literary gremlin out there that always likes to throw a couple little things in. And that's why, you know, you won't read any major press book that doesn't have, you know, a handful of errors. I mean, it's just, it's weird how it gets through.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, the author that takes time to really turn in a clean copy to begin with, you really appreciate those writers. And I can speak. RG is one of those because I just work with her on the editing side of things. And, she is one of those writers that actually hands you, some very clean copy at the get-go, which gives the editor much more leeway to focus on the deeper side and the nuance side and the story side, and that's definitely helps, especially in the indie world.
I'll tell you my trade secret. No, just my drafts do not see eyeballs until I'm at least three in. I do at least three drafts before anyone else sees it.
Yep, that's a pretty good rule. Yeah.
Yeah, I know I've talked to some editors, especially recently with the novel. I've
20 pounds hard.
Daniel?
I do one draft about 20 times.
How does that work?
Yep.
How does one pass 20 times
work? I don't leave a sentence most of the time until I'm positive that's what I want to say in it.
Oh, I got you. I understand. That's good, too.
And do you give feedback with your rejections? Yeah, Tommy made a neat comment about – he was talking about feedback from editors and such. Talking about that. Do you offer a lot of feedback with your rejections when you're doing an anthology on stories that are not accepted?
I try to. As the volume gets higher and you get more and more in there, there's just not time to do it. And I'm just one guy with a full-time job during the day and five children, but I try.
Five children.
I keep mentioning that because sometimes it overwhelms me still to think that I have five children.
I have two, and I'm doing good to get through the day. So I'm furious.
Oh, yeah, I'm in awe of you. Yeah, because two, with RG, RG's right. Yeah, anytime I hear two or higher, I'm like, oh, they got a full-time job on top of the full-time job.
Amazing. I couldn't do it without her. I don't know how single parents do it. But I try to give feedback, and especially if I can see people really tried. I mean, if I see people didn't bother to read my guidelines, they're not going to get much other than please read the guidelines before making submissions. Thank you for your submission. But if I see people tried, and especially if it's a story that I got several on the same theme and I'm having a hard choice between them, I'll tell them, I had to choose between yours and somebody else's, and what it came down to was, was this a slightly cleaner copy, or I had to flip a coin because I just couldn't make up my mind and I can only accept so many because the publisher won't pay for more. And so, but I give people encouragement when I can. Your story touched me. I wish I could include it too, but it was just hard choices here. And so I like to do that. I haven't done one in, it's been a couple of years since I did an anthology now. And I kind of want to do it again, but then I remember how hard it was to write this novel. I don't know when I'll have time again.
I was doing editing, which I'll never be an editor. That's, you can ask Stephen and Holly that. It'll never happen. But I would probably be an A, you know, if they, you know, didn't read the guidelines. I probably wouldn't send them anything back. You know, just.
Right.
I hear you.
That you'd be that editor.
I always at least acknowledge that it was received and then send something. And I've got a form letter. I can just cut and paste in. Thank you for your submission.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
One of the things in, if anyone's read Stephen King's On Writing, which is his like writing memoir, which I highly recommend. I think every writer should read it, whether you're a fan of Stephen King or not, you should read it just from the writer perspective. But he talks about when he was, you know, 16 or whatever, and he started writing short stories and submitting them to magazines and this, that, and the other. And every rejection that he got, he put on this nail above his desk. But then he started noticing that he stopped getting form letter rejections. He was actually getting feedback rejections. And he was like, I'm improving. Like, he was still getting rejections, but he was actually getting, like, a personal email instead of the form letter.
Yes.
I thought that. I was like,
that's
okay,
a good feeling,
he's got perspective.
Yeah.
No, and it is a good sign that you are in contention. Yeah, because editors will tend not to send a personal note of, you know, some feedback or comments like that unless, you know, you're somebody they're taking very seriously. They won't do it. I mean, it'll just be like a form letter or something like that. But yeah, so any personal comments, yeah, take that as a win. Yeah, that's not something to be too despondent about. That's good. That's a sign.
I've sent stuff into fantasy and science fiction and Andromeda Spaceways and Asimov's and Clark's World and a bunch of places that I'm just hoping to one day get into. And every once in a while I'll send something and I'll get some sort of a more personal note and less of a form letter. And that is encouraging. So, yeah, quite.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And,
do you put what type of stories you're looking for on your submissions?
On the guidelines?
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes. I try to write very detailed guidelines telling people the genre and you know, what we're looking for as far as PG-13 or R or PG, things like that, to give people a lot of instruction about what we're looking for so that they can meet it. And you know, you overwhelm people with guidelines that are pages and pages long, but you want something detailed in a page or two there that you can let people know what you're looking for and the length, you know, the word count, whether the word, you know, if there's leeway in the word count, things like that. And the genre and the theme, because most don't you think, Stephen, that most anthologies have a pretty detailed theme these days?
In most respects, yeah, absolutely. Or they'll have a certain challenge involved. Just to use an example,
right.
Michael Nost had a real cool one where all the writers were given the first and last sentence of a story, and it was up to you to do everything in between.
Wow.
You know, it's called Between the Lines. And so there's topical themes or there's something like that that's kind of a structural challenge. But it's a very, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They definitely tend to have like a core kind of theme to kind of bring glue to bind them all together. Yeah. You tend not to see anthology that would have the eclectic nature of like a single author collection. Where in that sense, you know, it's like you just talked about with yours, yeah, you have a wide range of stories, but not necessarily a connecting theme. I mean, yeah, definitely anthologies that have the more of a theme, lean toward the theme side of things.
Yeah, collections tend to be the attraction is that particular author, whereas anthologies it's the topic or something on that order, something different.
Right.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's definitely a fun world, anthologies, whether you're editing them, writing for them, and yeah, definitely a good way to showcase writers. And as often anthologies will have a couple of known writers involved to kind of help sell the book a bit, and then they'll, you know, have spots for brand new writers to showcase. And so that's one thing I love about anthologies. They're kind of like a headline band with opening bands. Yeah, they definitely expose people to new artists, you know. I like that function of anthologies.
The readership. Yeah, the publisher loves to put someone with a readership on the front to attract people to it. Oh, I know that guy. I want one of his stories. And then, of course, then you get a chance to introduce the new guys. It's a fabulous vehicle for gaining audience for otherwise unknown people.
Yeah, yeah, I like them very much for that. But being an editor, I mean, it's something that I've noticed since I've, you know, taken the jump in the past couple of years to, you know, accept freelance editing projects and whatnot. It does help sharpen your analytical mind on writing. It really does. And until you've straddled both sides of the fence, as I say, it's hard to explain what I'm talking about, but I'm sure that you've seen that too. It does help you when you're analyzing your work and that, you know, not that you, I would never have a project of mine not be given to another editor to look at, of course, but it does help as far as the polishing phase, I think. And I don't know if that's the same for you or not, but I've just noticed that as I've gotten deep into editing side.
It does, yes, because once I see mistakes other people are making or something they're doing really well, I start looking for it in my own work, and then I have the awful tendency to start editing my own work while I'm writing it, which is terrible because you need to get your draft done at some point. But yeah, it is a different hat to wear and a slightly different set of skills. But it does, if you can convert the one to the other, then you can sharpen your skills as a writer. I found that writing short stories, I'm really, really confident of that now. But this novel that I just finished, oh my word, it was a different beast. And I found that I broke down there and really needed an editor and did a lot of things that if it had been a short story, I never would have made those mistakes. And thank goodness Chris Kennedy Publishing still liked my work because But by the end of it, I felt so lost, and it's like, okay, I've got the draft. Okay, now what do I do? And of course, you know, he's got editors we're working with there, but it felt humbling to have someone go over my novel for the first time the way I had gone over other people's short stories for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And it was quite an experience. And
well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Robert.
For the next one. Yeah.
Because something that I try to get across to writers is that the short story, the novella, and the novel are different entities. They really are. I mean, and the novella is kind of a tweener. It's kind of a tweener between the things that make short stories work and the things that make novels work. It's kind of a nice hybrid, if you will. But novels to short stories, I mean, they are very different beasts, and you really have to take different approaches. And that I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that, you know, a lot of writers tend to overlook that. But yeah, there's a definite short story art. There's a definite novel art. And then I love that middle zone, the novella, because it does get to draw off both a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I really I wrote a novel. It was more of a novelette than novella called A Bag Full of Eyes a number of years ago. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I thought I did a great job on it. And it won an award and everything was fabulous. And started trying to get my novels done. Of course, I only just got one years later here, got one that's done enough to be published and such, and, you know, found one that matches a publisher and everything. But just the confidence I had writing even that after writing short stories to the lack of surety and confusion I had finishing the novel and thinking, what have I done here? Is this any good? Oh, gosh, are they going to reject it? I mean, they asked me to do it, and then I'm afraid that it's not going to make it. But that they worked with me, and it's great to be able to go through the process and survive it and know that, okay, next time I know how to do it better, and, oh, gosh, why did I make these rookie mistakes that I should have known better than to make? It was very humbling, and hopefully I've learned a lot.
Oh, we always keep learning. That's the thing about writers. Yeah. I don't care how many books you have out there. I don't care how many years you've been in the business. I mean, you always have room to grow and tweak and improve and expand. I love that about writing. That's something I've learned, you know.
I honestly, like, from a market view, I feel like short stories in some ways are undervalued. Because
Agreed.
It's sometimes it's harder to write the short story than it is to write. I mean, I get what you're saying, making the leap from short story to novel. I had the almost identical experience when I wrote my first novel. But there's a skill to writing a good short story that is, you know, you hear about these like flash fiction contests, and I mean, I think it's a great way to like hone the details of one's craft, you know. And I collect short story anthologies, so I'm going to have to hit up your website and see what kind of damage I can do there. So.
Oh, fantastic. Fabulous. I totally agree. And I think I don't know if you know Sean Taylor, he's a writer I know from down in Atlanta, I believe. And he loves.
Oh, yes. Love Sean.
Underappreciated art. Yeah. Yeah, he's a great guy. And I'm quite with you guys on that. It is an art form. And one of the reasons I reject a lot of stories to anthologies when I'm doing them, they haven't written a short story. They've written a chapter of a novel, or they've written a serial. They've written a serial, but not a short story. And you've got one chance to get everything said and done, and it needs to be tight, and it needs to have no extraneous words, and it needs to end and not be a cliffhanger, because you've written one short story. And I advise people to go back to the classics for that. To really go back and read some of the classic short story writers who are really concise and deliberate and eloquent in just a few words. And it's amazing what they did. You go back to some of the ones you read in high school and such, and at the time reading it for an assignment, it seemed like it was really long. And now that you're having to write, you know, 7,500 words, you realize how short it was, and how eloquent and really, really, what's the word I'm looking for here? Sophisticated it was to get that much said, so much nuance into what is that, only 3,000 words? What? How'd they do that? And they did it with just a few thousand words.
Nice.
Barely even a short story. And I'm struggling to say everything I need to say in 7,500. And look what they did. So go back to look at those guys.
That's awesome.
In your class.
Revisiting what you're assigned to read in school is an interesting experience when you do it years later, because when it's not an assignment and you're not in high school anymore, you suddenly like, oh wow, this really is amazing stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you're forced to read it.
Go back to the Telltale Heart and really look at how it was crafted and appreciate it. Go back. It's great. It is an art form of its own.
Poe was an absolute genius.
Poe was wonderful.
Problematic as all get out, but he was a genius.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
No question. No question. I love how you mentioned that. And I'm going to have to make a note. We got to get Sean Taylor on the show. I don't think we've had him yet. So, like, we've done so many episodes over the years, but I do not think we've had his partner in crime, Bobby Nash, a few times. But I'll have to rouse Sean and see if we. I'll have to see if we can get Sean on the show, because I have not spoken to him in a live in a while. We keep in touch once in a while by Facebook or whatnot. But great guy, and love his work too. Glad you mentioned him, Robert, because I'm gonna have to get on him now to get on the show. That's awesome.
Remember when you say his name, Stephen? When you say his name, just remember to say it, Taylor, for me, please.
Taylor, I
can
do that.
You gotta growl it. He always yells at me, Krog! So we got to yell at each other.
I know.
We pass that along for me when you see him.
You know who did that to me on LinkedIn was Bobby. I posted about you appearing on the show, and Bobby put in all caps, Krog! So Bobby got you too.
Lots of extra letters,
pass that along to you so you can razz him back now. But, Bobby got you on that. But, great guys and love them very much. But, Sean is not – we need to get him on for a convo, because he's a character. He's a lot of fun. But I did look up the website address. I did put it in the chat room. But just again, for folks, ChrisKennedyPublishing.com is the website. ChrisKennedyPublishing.com. Award-winning sci-fi and fantasy. I love their slogan. Like Star Wars, only better. That's on their webpage, on their homepage.
That's where you find all the Hit World stuff. Shank and The Bullet for the Shooter, which is a great book. The Trash Man, a lot of fun. And then I haven't read John Sears' books, but I'm sure they are a lot of fun. That's The Ferryman, and I don't remember the titles of the second one. So but the Hit World stuff is there. And then Chris Kennedy has all kinds of other things as well that are just well worth the read.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. Yeah, and yeah, great publisher, and yeah, definitely, you are definitely an asset to them. So that's good that you're aboard. So that's awesome.
Oh, I hope.
But yeah, they got a cool, very nice website too, I might add. Yeah, some great stuff on the cover. I'm checking it all out even as we speak. Yeah, they got a very nice, clean, well designed website with some cool artwork. But on that theme, we like to always give our guests a chance to tell the audience where they can connect with you. So go ahead, since we have about 9.5 minutes left, might as well go ahead and do it. And tell folks how they can connect with the world of Robert J. Krog on online or social media channels, whatever you would like.
Oh, sure. If you just look up Robert Krog on Facebook, you'll find me very easily. I'm a friend with Stephen there. And Bobby Nash and a lot of people you just mentioned, Tommy B. Smith, you can find me on his friends list. And then I have www.krogfiction.com. I haven't updated my website in a long time, but it's Krog Fiction. And if you look up just Krog Fiction dot, what is it, WordPress, there we go, WordPress.com, you'll find it. But most of my stuff is on Amazon. I've got an Amazon author page. You can find it by Googling my name and then, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, searching my name on Amazon, then you can find my page there. And it has almost everything
cool.
That's available right there. But you can also find me on Hirith, S-F-F-H, and that's Hirith, H-I-R-A-E-T-H. I've got a number of things with them. And if you go to the publisher's website, of course, the publisher and the writer always get a little more money out of that than on Amazon, which is much appreciated. And I've got some things with the Dark Oak Press, which is just darkoakpress.com. The Stone Maiden, Other Tales is there. Tall Ship of Star and Plunder is there, and some other things I'm in. And you can find me there. Like I said, I don't have one spot because I'm with so many different publishers. And I'm really neglected my website over the years. I need to start updating that. But Amazon or Dark Oak Press here at SFH, SSFH, and others. Yeah, that's
very
where
nice.
I am.
Very nice.
Here and there.
Yes, Dark Oak Press, the home of the legendary Alan Gilbreth. Yeah, missed that guy.
Wonderful.
Haven't seen
man.
Him in a few years, but love that guy very much. And I know one of the forces of Dark Oak Press, and I know Kimberly Richardson. Yeah, she's going to be participating in the virtual side of Imaginarium. But yeah, she's got a new imprint coming soon. I forget, the name slips my head, but yeah, she's actually starting a new publishing imprint, boutique imprint that she described it as on Instagram. But yeah, definitely a great group. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you've worked with some good ones, Robert. some of my favorite
Kimberly's
people around.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, when
I'm
it comes
glad.
To Dark Oak and Tyree Campbell and all those folks, yeah, they love them. And of course, Chris Kennedy Publishing, top-notch. Yeah, definitely. Love that team. Yeah, great, great bunch. But, yeah, you've got a lot going on since those days when we, hanging out at Mid-South Con. despite five kids, you've been busy on the literary side. Well done.
I had one on the way when I met you, Stephen. I was over my head then. I'm still over my head. I remember I had a copy of The Stone Maiden, Other Tales with me, and it was the original copy with just 7 stories in it. The cover was black with white lettering. I didn't have cover art because I did it myself, and I didn't know how to do the cover art. And I had something slightly better than a handmade sign on my table. And there I was next to you, and you had your banners and your books with your great cover art. And I was like, oh, boy. But it was a great time. I think we both sold a lot of books, too, actually.
Yeah, that was a good weekend. Yeah, it was one of those encouraging weekends, which, you know, as you know now, that it doesn't always work that way. But yeah, when you have those good weekends, it sure does feel good. So on that theme, though, you're getting on the road again, and you are coming. I know to Imaginarium. Do you have other events coming up this summer as you get active out in the post-COVID world, hopefully?
I have just Imaginarium, and then I need to make certain I'm online with or set up to do Memphis Comic and Fantasy Convention and ShadowCon in the fall and winter. And then I'm looking to really gear up again next year to really do things. But at the moment, it's just little bits here and there. That's it. I'm not as busy as I want to be, but, you know.
Well.
Oh, that's pretty busy.
Yeah, it sounds like you're busy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as far as you've obviously got a lot of project live events, and you're not sitting still. That's for sure. But it's going to be great to see you in person once more. I am definitely looking forward to that.
It'll be fabulous.
I'm probably speaking for Tommy B on that front as well, and everyone else. But yeah, definitely going to be good to finally see people in person again after we've all kind of been cooped up for a year, more or less.
I went to the library today, and it was really weird. Sorry, that's the end of the story.
That's the end of the story.
Yeah.
Great story, RG. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's the start of the story.
See, I told you short stories are hard.
Anna
and I are going to drop the – go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Robert.
I said Anna and I are going to drop the children at my sister's house on that Thursday and then drive up that Friday morning to Louisville and be – a free childless couple for a few days with you guys. It'll be great.
All right, get a little break, a little bit of a break. That's nice. Yeah,
a little bit of a break.
So we'll have to do our best to entertain you. That'll be our job on our end.
I think I still remember the lyrics to the Barney song. If you get really desperate, so
I'll still be if you don't sing that to me.
They are
that's too good.
Let us entertain you.
Oh, that's too much. it'll be fun, and I'm glad you get a little bit of a getaway. It's always good, and yeah, we can all, as I always used to tell you back in the old days, we can all go rogue with Robert Krogh. That's always been my phrase.
I had forgotten that, Stephen.
It'll be
great
here
to be
remind
there with
you
guys and do panels, and I think I'm doing I think Holly got me set up for a workshop of some sort, and I'm also busy.
Yeah, Holly said you have a good one cooking. Yeah, Holly said you have a good one cooking for the programming. And I know that I get handed them when they're ready to post, and I get them on the site. But pretty versed in what's on the site. I think yours was Nuance. Is that correct? About Nuance.
That's it. Yes, Nuance. Yeah,
that's on the site. That is on the site. Yeah,
nice.
I know that one's on the site.
The English language has an enormous number of adjectives, and we should use them more often. Distinguish one meaning from another. That was it. Yes, Nuance.
I remembered that off the top of my head.
Yeah. Holly just actually walked in here, and she told me to tell you that she remembered your workshop specifically off the top of her head. And that's small compliment, because when you do a convention and they're literally dealing with about 200, because we doubled, remember, folks, we doubled this year, virtual and in person. So she's talking about almost 200 sessions that she's organizing. Yeah, she wanted you to know she remembered it off the top of her head. So that's a big compliment.
Well, I'm glad.
Robert.
Thank you, Holly.
Yeah, she stole in here to tell me that just now. It's just perfect timing, Holly. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And we'll have to get Tommy B. Smith to sing the Barney song, too. I would love to see that. I'd almost pay $5 to see that. It's about all I can afford right now. So, but I'd try to pay that.
Just give me some earplugs before you do it.
Yeah. No, as a fellow parent, I got your back.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh Lord, this has been too much fun. Yeah, I'm already getting warmed up for the coming appearance of Robert Krogh. This is gonna be great. But we're
Thank
coming
you,
up in about 1 minute and 15 seconds left. So I wanted to hand it over to you, Robert, to make any final comments, and then RG Daniel, you could take us out, and we'll definitely be hopping aboard with everybody on next Wednesday at 9, as always, on the Star Chamber show. But go ahead, Robert.
Thank you very much. Just thank you very much. You guys have been great, and I really appreciate the time. And you made me comfortable when I was very nervous, because I haven't been on the air in a long, long time. So you guys were fabulous. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. RG, on to you.
On to me. As always, you can find everything and then some at rgwesterman.com. Check out the current film production at nobodyslisteningmovie.com. And it's been great hanging out, and I will see everyone next time.
And tonight was a fabulous night with a author, editor, and he showed us so many different things. Remember to read guidelines. Guidelines will be your friend when you're submitting. And until next week, be creative. This is Daniel Dark signing off.